Ever wonder if there's more to the movies that you love?
Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z?
Who chose the plot twists?
Why use those characters?
Is there a deeper meaning?
We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way.
So let's put on our thinking caps, because we're going to dig deep and get a little mentally messy.
We are
the Filmlosophers. Hello, my name is Eddie.
And I'm Chad.
And we are
the Filmlosophers.
Class is in session. You know, we just decided one day and we were like, you know what, Chad? I think we should start a podcast. What do you
think? You know what, Eddie? I agree with you.
And you know what? We got out of bed. Of course, we were in separate beds at the time.
Definitely.
And we decided.
Not the same bed.
We ran into our old friend, Mr. Corey Vincent. And we talked about it, and we're like, you know what, we got to do this. So we are here in sunny Sacramento, California, and we're recording live here at VGB Studios.
Yeah, very very nice of him to loan all this fancy equipment in this beautiful room to us.
Yeah, that is very nice. I don't know if you guys have seen yet on videogamebang.com and all their other sites that they have assigned to it, but there's plenty of pictures of this studio if you want to take a look. Again, my name is Eddie, and this is Chad.
Hi.
And we just decided we wanted to have a podcast that really kind of exemplifies what we love and what we are both passionate about, our movies.
I love going to the movies.
And we're not just people who are like have our own collection and we sit in our mom's basement and we just watch movies day after day. No, we actually have some type of affiliation to movies, of course, you know. I'm a writer and a journalist for two different websites, a website called nerdreactor.com, and I'm also a correspondent and writer for redcarpetreporttv.com as well.
And I love screenwriting as a hobby. I haven't ever sold anything yet, but, you know, it's a lifelong goal of mine, so I believe in you.
I believe in you, you know.
In my day job, I work for a marketing company here in Sacramento. It doesn't have anything to do with movies, which is why I need to get all of my movie energy out in something like a podcast.
Yeah, I mean, there's always a ton of opportunities for you to get that marketing into the movie industry. So we're just waiting for that one really big wig to hear the show. And then once Chad is found, then who knows where the show will go.
That's right. Come and ask me for ideas. I got a million of them.
Literally a million of them. We never stop them.
Written down, so that's probably my first problem.
But yes, we are the Filmlosophers, and of course, we're going to be bringing you as much movie information, as much mental exercising we can do with the movies that you love to watch. And so, yeah, we're here to have a great time.
With that, let's get started.
First off, we wanted to open up with a couple little bit of tidbits on movie news. Just recently, Ghostbusters finally releases their first full trailer. What do you think about that?
You know, it was decent. I don't know that it was anything that said, oh, I'm going to stand in line early, go see this movie, because I am a big fan of Saturday Night Live, huge fan of most of their performers. This is pretty much an SNL love fest, so, you know, there's a lot that I would love about it, but still, you know, I don't know. Ghostbusters was not my jam as a kid. I enjoyed it, but it wasn't like, you know, I didn't just really want to see it again and again and again.
Yeah.
So I don't know that I wasn't terribly turned off. I wasn't terribly turned on. It's one of those, yeah, if a bunch of friends go to see it, I'll probably go to see it. And or if we decide to talk about it here on the podcast, then I'll just obligate myself to pay some money and, you know, talk about it.
Oh, yeah. And if we don't have to pay for money, we'll just sneak into the theater. But no, Ghostbusters was actually my jam growing up. I saw the first and second one, of course. I had all the toys. I watched the cartoon. I had the copy of the VHS. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I had a copy of a VHS tape.
What?
So, you know, I'm old school and retro.
See, Here's the thing that really got me about that. I think the reason, because I am a sweetaholic. I have a sweet tooth the size of the state of Texas, and I think it's because they made the bad guy a giant marshmallow. And as a kid, I just had a thing against that. I was not thrilled that the really cool-looking big marshmallow dude ended up being the bad guy.
That's just pretty much kind of putting a hex on everything that you love, and it's totally jacked up. But for me, the original idea of what the Ghostbusters stood for, what it was about, I mean, it was a new thing at the time. Most people who were doing films during the 80s, they were doing them about, supernatural stuff. They were really solidly fully into either a straight up horror film or straight up action thriller that had that horror aspect. But then you add in something like Ghostbusters, and all of a sudden you have a comedic approach to a group of people who can actually police the undead or some form of supernatural. And it was great.
Put him in a cage.
You had Bill Murray, you had Dan Aykroyd, you had Harold Ramis, you know, and then, of course, the one person of color that eludes me, the name.
Yeah, I don't look at me again. It wasn't my jam. I don't even remember any of the main plot points. Quite frankly, I just remember a giant marshmallow guy in the end. So in terms of, you know, this Ghostbusters for the 21st century, sequel, reboot, what's going on?
Yeah, you know, I honestly feel like, you know what, after looking at it over, and I've already seen the trailer a couple dozen times just trying to really get a good feel for it.
Wow, this was your jam.
It was. This really holds a really important place in my heart, and I want to make sure they do it justice. I honestly feel it's a sequel. It could possibly very well be a sequel.
They certainly position it that way with the text that's in the trailer. You know, 30 years ago, 29 years ago, whatever, all this stuff happened. It seems like a sequel to me.
Yeah. And there's talks of obviously, with Bill Murray having a reprisal of some role, or not even a reprisal, but just a cameo in the film. How could you bring back Bill Murray without having him play the role?
Yeah, no, you wouldn't do that. You wouldn't do it.
So I think that kind of also adds to the idea that it is possibly a sequel.
Moving on to just a little bit extra, one thing that you would do if you were Warner Brothers, this is transitioning to a new topic, is you would cast J. Jonah Jameson to play Commissioner Gordon.
What is
in your universe of movies?
What is a bigger finger to the eye than DC saying, ha ha, I stole probably one of the best things that ever came out of that original trilogy,
hands down,
and took him to become Commissioner James Gordon.
Yeah, there's nothing that quite says, oh, we would totally keep that guy in our reboot after our reboot of the Spider-Man franchise. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was money. He was quality. He did that character to death. But yeah, he's jumping ship to the other side.
Yeah, you know, the idea of him playing Commissioner Gordon, though, I don't know if I'm fully sold on that. I honestly could see him playing maybe something else. JK...
They're only saying that he's playing Commissioner Gordon. He's really playing a different role.
Oh, yeah, he's probably playing... I could see someone playing Commissioner Gordon, somebody like Bryan Cranston. Bryan Cranston is like my dream cast of this particular role.
Isn't he everyone's?
Well, he was everyone's for Lex Luthor, for just about everything else. But, you know, I'm not one to say it's not going to work. I'm just saying J.K. Simmons, ever since his portrayal as the music teacher in Whiplash, you look at that role and you're like, dude, this guy can, like, literally lay down some beatings.
Well, I mean, you get a sense of his range as a performer, which is nice. A lot of times you play a role like J. Jonah Jameson in the original trilogy of Spider-Man films, and you could easily be put in a corner and typecast and forever for the rest of your career. And so it's nice that he has something else, that and the Farmers insurance commercials.
That's true.
You know, that kind of show off his diversity in terms of acting.
So here's my question to you then. Who do you think will end out coming out as playing the better Commissioner Gordon? Are we looking at J.K. Simmons playing a better one, or the Dark Knight trilogy version of Gary Oldman?
You know, I don't know. I have to say, all of the effort and energy that DC and Warner Brothers are putting into this whole new full universe of their characters, you know, a decade behind their main competitors, I'm not totally sold on it yet. They've got the whole, well, let's be more edgy, more dark, more realistic, and then they also have the characters that they have. You can't really accomplish edgy, dark, and realistic in every case. With their characters, they have aliens and Greek goddesses and all kinds of weirdness and lots of power and everything. So, you know, I don't know. The universe as a whole, maybe not my favorite thing yet.
Yeah.
I grew up a Marvel kid, so I'm already biased a little bit against it. But in terms of who's going to be the favorite, I really enjoyed Gary Oldman's performance. I kind of like the old guy in the original Tim Burton Batman. I thought he was, you know, not a focal point of the story, but I really enjoyed his performance. I don't know his name either, so don't ask.
No, that's true. But speaking of Marvel, Civil War released their character posters just the other day. We got poster listings now, not only of Team Captain America, but also Woohoo! Team Iron Man. You know, so now with the release of all the posters, we now have a Captain America facing off with Tony Stark. We got a Scarlet Witch facing off with Vision. We have a Hawkeye facing off with Black Widow. Falcon facing off with Black Panther. We got the Winter Soldier facing off against Rhodey the War Machine. And we also have one last installment coming into Team Cap, which is Ant-Man.
Ant-Man and no counterpart
and
on
no counterpart.
Team Iron Man's side. But that's because Captain America's cooler and more people want to be on his team.
Who wouldn't want to be on Team Captain America? Obviously, everybody on Team Iron Man. But
I think he's paying them under the table.
You know, with somebody with that much money, I wouldn't doubt it. But seeing as we have a certain hero without a counterpart, who do you think that last seat's going to be revealed for? I mean, I honestly don't think they're going to do a poster, but they're going to have that match up with something.
I know if I was being completely ridiculous, I'd say Natalie Portman is Lady Thor. Because why the heck not? You know, except there's no precedent for it in the movies yet. But her character does actually become Lady Thor in the comic book. Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert. Sorry, should have said that. Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of speculation that it's Spider-Man because we know that Spider-Man is going to be in the film to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
Ant-Man's a little guy. He packs a large punch, apparently, but he's small. So, yeah. You know, maybe, I don't know, maybe there's not a counterpart.
And like you said, Tom Holland's super young. I mean, he's still, I don't know, has he even become a teenager? Is he even, like, in his teens?
He's like, 19, 20, I think.
Oh, is he?
So, yeah, he's on the far end of his teens, if not all the way out by now.
So, like, Ant-Man's just going to shrink down to the size of a middle-aged teenager or something like that and fight him at his...
You know, I was reading something the other day on Collider, I believe, talking about an interview that the Russo brothers were doing in connection with the film and talking mm-hmm. about how they wanted to give every character their own moments. So you've got things like Ant-Man riding in on an ant, and, you know, Falcon has a specific fighting style, flying style that's unique. You haven't seen exactly these moves in this way before, even though this is now his fourth appearance in a Marvel movie, by the way. Anthony Mackie as the Falcon.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Which is kind of interesting to think about because he's only been a character for 2.5 years, three years?
Just about.
And this is already his fourth appearance, so that's pretty cool for him.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know that he has to have an opponent. Ant-Man, maybe he's just there to say something funny, and then he sits the rest of it out because he's like, you guys are nuts. You're blowing up an airport where civilians are all around. I'm just going to, you know, go down into the sewer grate and hang out with my little ant buddies.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Who would you – here's a question to ask, and I guess this would be just about anybody's question to answer. Who would you in if all the doors were open and every single thing was available and – the director of the Russo brothers came to you and said, Chad, obviously,
yes, Russo brothers.
Obviously in unison because they're both going to speak at the same time.
They always do.
But they're going to say, Chad, we need the perfect idea. We need the perfect character to pit Ant-Man against. We don't have anybody and we need you to help us develop this.
To pit Ant-Man against?
To pit Ant-Man against. Who would you choose?
Yeah, that's a hard question. You put me on the spot. I'm like, I know about five characters I'd like to see in this franchise, none of whom would be appropriate to put against Ant-Man because they're all, like, way too powerful. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with my previous answer, Lady Thor.
Lady Thor, yeah. There you go.
Bring her in.
And with that, we are going to be talking about today on today's show, the review of one of the most talked about Terminator films of all time.
Love it, hate it, somewhere in between. There are very few people in between, actually.
There are very few people. That is the movie we are talking about today, Terminator Salvation.
Oh, pulled a fast one on you.
Oh,
we were
yeah.
going to talk about a different one.
You were thinking we were going to go T2?
Nope.
T1.
No, we just really like the music.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We just, this movie, this soundtrack right here is so iconic. You just, I could listen to this to bed.
Oh, well, I mean, you were telling me yesterday that you've seen T2 like 70, 80 times.
At least. I wore that VHS out so much.
With the VHS.
Oh, yeah.
I'm devoted.
I was a child of the retro era.
I think the only VHS tape that I wore out was Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
I had that one too as well. Yeah. Well, like I told Chad yesterday, we got a chance to see this film, and we got a chance to, obviously beforehand, but we got a chance to talk about it yesterday a little bit. And one thing I did want to mention to him was that, you know what? On my fifth birthday, one of the most iconic things that could have ever have happened on a birthday was I was given two VHS tapes.
By Arnold Schwarzenegger himself.
Oh yeah, by Arnold Schwarzenegger himself. No, the two VHS tapes that were given to me was Beauty and the Beast, which was, The second one was Terminator 2.
Which Judgment is not Day. The movie that we're talking about.
Which is not the movie we're talking
it's
about.
It's a fond childhood memory. Of
it is. It's a great childhood memory. So.
Terminator Salvation.
Terminator Salvation.
So, you've rounded out the original trilogy by this point. Oh, a little Star Trek in there too. So you've rounded out the trilogy with, I think, personally, T3, my least favorite. Well, there's another one beyond Terminator Salvation that, I don't know, they're neck and neck.
Yeah, yeah.
But then here comes McGee and a whole posse of people who really enjoy the Terminator franchise and know that it's a humongous cash cow, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they say, okay, we're going to restart. We're going to do a new trilogy with a different starting point that's still tied to everything that came before. And they put together Terminator Salvation, which, you know, had all the pre-premiere press for on account of Christian Bale's onset tirade, if you recall that. From a few years ago, that this was the movie where that happened. He, you know, raged against the machine and somebody caught it on tape. And so you had that going for it. And yeah, right. See, that was a pun.
No, that was great. I was actually very, very clever.
Decently with it.
You are with it.
Because also in the film, he plays John Connor, who is one of the main figureheads, if not the main figurehead of the human resistance against the machines.
The machines. So,
full circle. Yeah, so. Lots of hype, good, bad, people go to see it, and initially, people really didn't like it.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk about how the film didn't live up to what James Cameron had done, had worked so hard to create, and blah, blah, blah. If you're not too familiar with the film we're talking about, 2009's release of Terminator Salvation, starring Christian Bale, Sam Worthington, Bryce Dallas Howard, Common. It had a whole slew of different actors and actresses in the film. Michael Ironsides.
If
you don't know who Michael Ironsides is, you have yet to see a movie with a good villain in it. Because Michael Ironsides...
You have yet to see a movie where they wanted to cast Tommy Lee Jones but couldn't afford him.
So they chose Michael Ironsides. So this film obviously takes place post-Terminator 3. The idea of the timeline is, after that, John Connor is not yet fully over the entire resistance, but he is in a position of authority. He is a leader of sorts, a type of captain. I don't really
think... He's kind of like their lead propagandist.
Oh, just about.
He does his, you know, fireside chats over the radio.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or the equivalent.
And John Connor obviously does his whole bit where he talks about, you know, you and me, we've been at war since before either of us ever existed. That whole deal. And so that's his whole spiel. You're obviously seeing somebody who is rising up through the ranks, not so much as far as in authority, but as somebody who everybody looks to as a savior of sorts, because of the fact that he has all this information that was given to him by his mother, Sarah Connor. And like Chad said, he has his fireside chats at night on the radio talking about, if you're listening to this, you are the resistance.
Yeah, P.S., the Batman voice really wouldn't work over the radio. Like, if you were actually listening to the way that he's delivering the line over the radio frequency, you probably would have a hard time hearing what exactly John Connor was trying to say to you.
Mm-hmm. Because ultimately, everyone would be like, oh my gosh, I think our speaker's going out on our radio. We got to get new speakers. We don't have a radio check.
It's true. Now, here's an interesting bit of trivia. I didn't know this until we rewatched the movie recently so that we could talk about it here on the podcast. And I did some research because that's what you do when you're going to talk about something for quite a few minutes. I didn't know that originally they approached Christian Bale to play the role of Marcus Wright, who is the Terminator character, if you will, of this story. And actually, the entire story was very different when they finished the script. It was a story about Marcus Wright. John Connor played a tangential role. He was in the film, but he wasn't a main focus of the film. When they decided to go ahead and cast Christian Bale, not as the main Terminator guy, but as John Connor,
yeah.
And then they cast Sam Worthington, who had yet to become fairly well known for a little movie we call Avatar. So this was actually filmed after Avatar, but because of the post-production sequences and everything and all the time that goes into it, this movie came out before Avatar released in all of its 3D blue-hued glory. And so Sam Worthington was cast as this Terminator character. However, since they had Christian Bale as John Connor, so you've got iconic actor who's actually the most well-known performer in the movie, and the iconic character, maybe with the exception, well, no, not really, of Kyle Reese, who is a huge factor in this story.
Yeah.
They actually redid many parts of the script to give more weight to the John Connor character, which is one of the things that contributed to a problem that a lot of people had when the movie came out. They weren't sure who's the main character supposed to be. What is this story about? Like, what's the point? And a lot of that is because they were even rewriting the script while they were filming. I didn't know this before, but I discovered it, you know, earlier this week while researching for this show. So, you know, there is some merit to the complaining and the all the haters out there who had to get their piece in because, like you, they received a VHS copy of T2 for their fifth birthday, and this movie just totally dashed all their hopes and dreams about what the apocalypse really looked like because, you know, we all dream about that. I'm in a very different boat. I thought that the movie was really, really good, primarily because they were able to focus on characters other than John Connor, Kyle Reese, Sarah Connor, and that's, Arnold Terminator.
That's the structure of a great story, is several layers of different aspects of the film itself. You have, like you said, you have the Kyle Reese character, you have the Sam Worthington, Marcus Wright character, you have the Christian Bale, John Connor character, then you have the whole subplot of the resistance and their attempt to try to thwart the entire war from ever getting larger by this one large attack. And mind you, yes, I am. So you ask anybody, and Terminator 2 Judgment Day holds a very high place on my shelf of wonderful films. And not just because, obviously, Arnold Schwarzenegger is in it. I mean, he's not that great of a character at all. But the fact that the story development that's in that film and the way the bond is between John Connor and the Terminator and the whole idea of an evolving relationship between two people moving on into something to where it actually can be a tangible thing where the Terminator is now understanding, now I know why you cry. That is something I cannot do.
Arnold, is that you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Did you come to our first podcast?
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah. He was the governor of California. So, but going back to the film, I'm going to admit, and I will stand before you and say it. When I first saw Terminator Salvation, I was not a fan because of all those reasons that you said. There was no weight when I first saw it. There was no heft as far as a large enough character to really play that role of John Connor as an adult. See, you have all this built up storylines and story plots and everything from T1, T2, T3. And you're expecting something great. And then you get Christian Bale, who...
A.K.A. Batman.
Who, Batman Begins, did get released previous to this film.
As did The Dark Knight.
As did The Dark Knight. So you have two films where that voice is already very prevalent in media forms. And then, like you said, you had the... leak of the audio of his tirade on some...
Which was by far the most interesting thing that I think Christian Bale did in this movie. And, of course, wasn't even in the movie. Yeah.
And then Christian Bale's acting in the film, I mean, you can tell, you could honestly see in this film, this character was not meant to be the main focus. You could see that it's kind of like an art project. You see, as kids do their little projects that they do at school, you can always tell what their parents did and what their kids did to add on to make it look like it was theirs. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just, it was superficial.
I said before, I enjoy screenwriting as a hobby. I do it in my spare time because for whatever reason, it's fun to me. I really like watching movies to try to get a sense of what the story is on the page. What did this look like on paper in order to get to what we're seeing on the screen? I think that is one of the funnest things for me to go see a movie or, you know, watch it on DVD, whatever. And once I learned that this story was originally very different and not as focused on John Connor, I did some thinking about, like, oh, well, what would that original script have been? I don't know. I didn't look to see if they have an earlier version of the script that somebody has published, because obviously it's been a number of years now, so you're not stepping on any toes if you publish the original shooting draft before they started making most of these changes. But you can imagine that emotional connection that you were mentioning between Arnold and young John Connor in Terminator 2, that kind of is a direction they were starting to go with Kyle Reese and the Terminator, so to speak, of this film,
Marcus Wright,
who is, he's a Terminator, but he's really kind of like a cyborg Terminator thing. He's not a machine with you know, living skin and tissue and whatever on top of it. He actually is both to some degree.
Yeah.
And compellingly portrayed as such, kind of a Frankenstein's monster sort of an approach to the Terminator concept. So there was a lot of freshness. You had to imagine they envisioned this as the launch of a new series of movies. So number one, you're not going to answer every question in the first one, which I think is one of the faults, because they pretty much do answer all of the primary questions all in the space of this movie. They don't leave too much for you to figure out after the end credits have rolled. Which, if you're trying to start a new franchise, you kind of want people with that cliffhanger ending kind of feel, because you want them to want to come back for the next one.
You're going
to
want them leaving wanting more, you know, ultimately. And like you said, that feeling. So first time around, I got that vibe. This was definitely something that I probably wasn't going to revisit. But over time, as you ponder, as most things, as people do ponder their regrets in life and so forth, I thought back to my younger youthful days back in 2009, and I was
how wrong you were.
I was like, you know, maybe I should give it a second chance. And I saw it some time ago, and I did watch it, and I paid attention, not so much as for the aspect of John Connor's character, but for the aspect of the story as a whole. And what the story as a whole tells is not a focus of a mediocre John Connor tale. It is a story that builds on the idea of the mediary step between where Skynet gets to the point to where they are ready to send back a Terminator and the point where John Connor is going to step into the role of full authority, and for the role where everybody sees Kyle Reese as more than just some wimp that's in the middle of L.A. hiding or doing whatever he is, taking care of the L.A. branch.
Sure.
And it carries itself a stronger story form now. You focus now more on the entity as a whole rather than, okay, I'm watching this and John Connor's not doing what John Connor does and blah, blah, blah. Which, by the way, little tidbit for this, Now that I look back, this John Connor is probably a perfect portrayal of the John Connor from T2, because the John Connor from T2 was an extremely large, whiny diaper baby who cried for every little thing. And so you have Christian Bale in here.
Was his last name Skywalker?
Pretty much, you know. Skywalker for, you know, Anakin Skywalker.
Well, and here's the thing, too. Sorry, I'm going to go on a bit of a tangent. Star Wars, original A New Hope, Star Wars, right? You've got a big problem. You've got the Death Star honing in, about to destroy the Rebellion. And, spoiler alert, cover your ears if you have not seen the original Star Wars film. They do defeat the Death Star in the end of the movie. They do not defeat the evil Empire. One of the problems that a lot of people had with Terminator Salvation was people went into the movie thinking, aha, this giant war between man and machine that has been promised in all these other movies, this is the movie that's going to show us that war. Now, there are a boatload of different types of Terminators, big robots, little robots, all, you know, in between. This is not yet the war.
I was almost like a little child.
As you were saying, this is an intermediate step. And I think a lot of people didn't get that when they went to see this film, was that this is not yet the point, like you were saying, the point in time in which they decide to send a human-looking killer robot into the past. You know, the Kyle Reese in this movie is not old enough to be the Kyle Reese who goes back into the past.
Yeah.
So this is something in between,
because
that ultimately would have paid off.
Yeah.
Had it had an entire, you know, three movie run, which it didn't.
Yeah. And now that I think about it, too, I mean, obviously, with the way this character development goes, at this point, Skynet doesn't even have the ability to time travel yet.
That we know of.
That we know. Well, at that time, because of the fact that if they were going to destroy somebody of importance, they would have sent the Terminator right there and then. The most logical, in thinking terms, most logical point would have been to send Marcus Wright to destroy Sarah Connor first. In that aspect, instead of looking for the father right there and then, they could have done that. That kind of leans on a little bit more to the idea of they weren't quite at the point where they need to be at the point of Terminator 1, T1. And like you said, it reeks with the idea that it's not quite at that point where they need to be. It is the mediary step because of the fact that if that was the end of the war, there would have been no reason to send Kyle Reese back. And if they hadn't sent Kyle Reese back, then there would have been no John Connor. The whole time travel paradox, you know, I'm pretty sure all of you know that.
Well, and people are so finicky. I mean, we all are. I'm finicky. You're finicky. We're all finicky. But, you know, one of the other big problems that people had with the movie was talking about Kyle Reese. Okay, so for whatever reason, however it happened, they figured out that he may be kind of an important dude. Right. And they know that John Connor's maybe kind of an important dude. They're number one and number two on Skynet's hit list. Right. And they have multiple opportunities to off Kyle Reese.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Marcus Wright even tells John Connor to his face at one point, if I wanted to kill him, I could have done
it. I would have done
it a long time ago.
Yeah.
Right. Nice. That was like a little Antonio Banderas.
Antonio Banderas.
As Marcus Wright.
There you go.
As Sam Worthington as Marcus Wright.
There you go.
No. So, and that's true of all the robots in the movie, all the Skynet-related attributes of the film. I mean, he's in the human, like, herd of captives.
Yeah.
He's picked up by a robot that could have squeezed him or something.
Yeah.
He's put into a really nice, shiny white cell with a door, with a glass door on it. You know, actually, much nicer place to be than where most of the people that he was captured with are probably sitting.
Yeah.
You know, and they could have often, but they didn't. And a lot of people are wondering, well, why not? And how did they know about him in the first place? Obviously, had this movie resulted in more movies, those are the leading questions that they wanted to leave to answer to another time. However, the audience wanted those questions answered now and the other questions that were answered in this movie to be answered later.
And one thing that people tend to forget is, which is very much stated throughout Terminator 1 and Terminator 2, it was the saying that Kyle Reese had said to Sarah Connor, and it's what Sarah Connor carved into the table: there is no fate but which we make. And everybody tends to forget that idea, that mentality of the film that continues to progress throughout all the films, is that each film, as it progresses, it changes the future, which in turn changes the past. You know, as time is going, there has to have been some type of collection of information and things like that, in my mind, theory-wise. I'm pretty sure that as time had progressed, Judgment Day didn't obviously happen at the same time as it should have. Things had happened. Things had changed. And I'm pretty sure Skynet had some type of database or whatnot. I don't know. But that's my thought on that. But
well, and let's not talk about the reboot that happened this past summer with Lord Terminator Genesis, which kind of skews that line a whole lot more.
Yeah.
I mean, they kind of just totally obliterated.
Yeah, they pretty much...
The through line of the story is it had happened before, and they said, oh, well, because of all of this tampering that's happened, everything in this movie is just going to be different, so get used to it.
And that film, of all things, that just didn't make sense to me. That one. I mean, I know we're not talking about Terminator Genesis right now, but just to state the fact that that movie just really crapped on the whole entire series. I love Terminator 1 and Terminator 2. That movie ultimately took that, wiped its butt with it, and then moved on and tried to do something brand new. Now, mind you, it was a fair attempt, but when you got things like Arnold Schwarzenegger trying to explain quantum physics and time travel to people who obviously should have more of an understanding, I mean, for God's sakes, you have one of them who's actually from the future who should be able to explain it. He's the one who traveled back.
Now you'd think.
Either way, that's not the point.
All of a sudden, Terminator Salvation looks like a much better movie,
it
doesn't
does. It? You know what? As long as you don't see the trailer. And that is my biggest beef with Terminator Salvation. Now, mind you, there's a lot of things in it that you could dispute, but my biggest issue with Terminator Salvation lies in its marketing. So this is my beef. This is my beef with you, Chad. You are representing marketing here today. Their marketing scheme...
I made that call. I'm sorry.
Their marketing scheme was based around, let's create a trailer that will showcase and reveal the biggest plot device in the entire film that's not supposed to be revealed until the third act of the film. Let's reveal it in the trailer so that everybody knows, which I guess, you know what, Terminator Genesis must have taken a page out of their book because they did the same dang thing.
They
you think
sure
about it,
did. They did not learn their lesson.
Nobody learned their lesson. But, of course, you have John Connor with a gun pointing right at Sam Worthington's character, Marcus Wright, and Marcus Wright is all jacked up as a robot. And you're like, well, wait, well, hold on. What's going on? So he's a robot? And then you're watching the film and you're like, well, this dude's alive. Okay. And then you're going through him like, but wait, there's that scene where he's a robot, isn't he? And then you're watching it and you're like, yeah, he's a robot. What's going on?
Now, here's the thing, though, with that whole issue, and I respect and appreciate how that was inappropriate to give the game away,
mm-hmm.
primarily because it doesn't happen until well over halfway through the movie.
Oh, yeah.
So you already know the twist that's coming and you're kind of bored. Like if you're sitting in the theater and you know that it's coming and it still hasn't arrived yet, you're kind of like twiddling your thumbs. Okay, when are you going to get past the part that we already know? The problem that they had was, I think in total, Christian Bale and Sam Worthington had three sequences together in the entire film. And the marketing tried to pit them as kind of head-to-head combatants. So it was really drawing this polar opposites. This dude and this dude are against each other, which, ironically, is not at all how the movie works out.
No.
Even. They're briefly against each other, and then they team up and, you know, work together to solve the problem, blow up Skynet Central, and move along to other activities in the very end of the movie. So, yeah. Number one, it was a little bit of false advertising, because that's not really what the story was about in the first place. But, you know, you can kind of respect knowing that the script went through a number of changes. This is not the original story that the filmmakers had planned while they were shooting the movie.
Yeah.
You know, what are you going to make of it? You know, from a marketing standpoint, you've got to try to sell it somehow. They made a bad call, but maybe the alternative was an even worse call, which would have bored people to tears and they didn't want to go see the movie or give it a chance at all. You never
know. That is true. And to say that, you know what? Unfortunately, Terminator Genesis did take a page from their book, and they did the same thing. And, of course, it did diminish. I don't know. I'm not too sure.
By the way, the twist in Genesis was even worse.
It was. It really was. To have, yeah, if you haven't seen it, obviously, if you've seen the trailer, then you know, obviously, yeah, what do you call it? John Connor.
Go to YouTube.
Yeah, go to YouTube.
Watch the trailer.
And then come back and hear us and just find out that John Connor is a robot now. He's a machine. But
he's gone to the dark side.
He has gone to the dark side. But, yeah, I think that my biggest beef with that part is the fact that that was revealed. That was a major plot device to me. But now that you mention it, I could see that possibly the alternative could have been in worse shape. It could have been. But, honestly, I just wish there was more of an investment in Sam Worthington's character. I feel like him as a actor altogether. Like, honestly, lately, he hasn't really done much. We just watched Everest the other day, and he was in that for, you know, his small role. But he was such a great actor in that period of time when it was, like, Clash of the Titans. He was doing the Terminator film. He was doing that one where he was on a ledge. There was just a lot of different roles for him to really stretch out and really
do well. Decided to get really, really busy after he filmed Avatar. And part of that was the studio's decision to try to put him in more movies because he had no street cred and yet was in this really expensive, big, important movie with, you know, introducing new technology into theaters and all this kind of stuff. And a huge global phenomenon, by the way. But yeah, they cast him in a lot of things, and he was willing to put in the time to do all those things. So you kind of saw him, not everywhere, but almost everywhere for a good 3 or 4 years. And then, as people do, because we're human beings, we wear out, because he's not a machine in real life. You know, he probably had to just take some time off, and now he's kind of popping back up on the radar before they go into Avatar 2, 3, and I think 4. They're going to film them all back-to-back.
Yeah, they're all shooting back-to-back out in New Zealand. So kind of spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the film, obviously you should go see it. It's still worth a watch, but spoiler alert, just to let you know, as the film ends, we do have a scene where John Connor is pierced through the heart. I believe it's through the heart.
Yeah,
he's pierced through the chest.
Torso.
Yeah, he's pierced through the midsection area with a long piece of metal. and Sam Worthington's character ends up destroying the Terminator, and they rush him in a helicopter as they destroy the base of Skynet there. And they're in some kind of...
They land in a field hospital in the desert.
Literally in the middle of nowhere.
And very spontaneously decide to do one of the oddest medical procedures in any movie, really.
Oh, yeah. Apparently, Bryce Dallas Howard, who is a nurse at the time, says that, you know, his heart's weak, he can't do it. And they've made several mentions throughout the film, oh, that he has a strong heart, that Sam Worthington's character, he has a strong heart. You have Moon Bloodgood stating it really just very obviously, oh, wow, it's a really strong, you have a really strong heart, I can hear it, blah, blah, blah. Sure. And so you know it's alluding to something, and so he does the most noble thing that he could think of, and he ends up giving up his own heart so that John Connor can live. And that is the end of the character of Sam Worthington, Marcus Wright, in this film.
Which is a shame.
It is. It's a huge shame, because this character development could have led on for more things. But overall, despite those small things, I think that the film still holds a pretty hefty weight as far as being better, number one, than Terminator 3, and better than Terminator Genesis. So within the, if you could label a adequate trilogy, so to speak, I would honestly probably say Terminator 1, Terminator 2, and Salvation. Yeah,
I mean, it definitely would have been a great starting point. I think, as odd as it is to say, and as much of a, you know, pseudo sacrilegious statement as this is going to be, the best thing they could have done in that movie was to shock people by letting John Connor die in the end. That would have been their like ace in the hole. You think that you're mad because you know that this other dude was actually a pseudo Terminator kind of figure before you went and saw it, but now you've truly been shocked in the end by, you know, John Connor being gone.
And speaking of which, this is actually going to segue into our special feature called Altered Reality.
Altered reality,
ladies and gentlemen, if I learn how to talk, is where we explain a certain aspect of a film that we're reviewing, and we're going to talk about it. And we're going to pretty much introduce an aspect of the film that maybe wasn't considered by the filmmakers at first, but we're going to talk about it and see how it would have fitted better in a different light.
Sure, and it doesn't have to necessarily be us pretending, you know, conspiracy theorist style, like, oh, they had these goals and whatever. And our thought would have really made the movie better. It's just really asking that question, why?
What if? And the big question for today is, in regards to Terminator Salvation, just like Chad was saying, what if John Connor had actually died in the film? What are your thoughts on that, Chad?
Well, number one, I think that people would have left the theater even angrier than they actually did. So there is that caveat right from the beginning. But I think ultimately, if they were going to position this film as the first of a new trilogy, you've got to till the soil. You've got to make fertile ground for a big long-term story to be told. I think that one of my favorite moments in Terminator Salvation is in that final sequence.
I was just
when
say that.
John Connor is essentially on his deathbed in a hospital, but he's, you know, surprisingly alert, verbose and all kinds of things. He's sitting there and he's talking about, you know, I don't remember what he's talking about, quite frankly, but then it goes to the other group of characters. You've got John's wife, Kate. You've got Marcus. You've got Blair, the fighter pilot played by Moon Bloodgood. You've got Kyle Reese. Star, I think, is there, the little girl doesn't speak, but she kind of senses the machines when they're around. And you've got this great little pod of characters that, aside from Kyle Reese in a different version and Kate as the only holdover for Terminator 3. They're all new characters. They've all been repositioned or placed within the story from a fresh angle here in this movie, and they're all in the shot together, and you're thinking, oh, they are going to kill John Connor, and these people are the yahoos who are going to carry this story on further for the rest of the series. And then Marcus opens his mouth and, you know, donates his heart, even though he's totally fine. There's every reason to keep him on the team, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I mean, as a longtime comic book nerd and huge fan of team stories like X-Men, yep. Avengers, etc. Yeah, they have every reason. He's the superhero. Like, he's the super-powered character. The rest of them mm-hmm. are, you know, maybe inspirational or persistent people. But he actually is stronger than he should be, more resilient than he should be. He can regenerate his tissue to a certain degree.
Yep.
I mean, there are a number of pluses. Also, he's repentant and wants to make good on a life that had gone wrong, which is his whole starting point. His life had gone way wrong. He was a death row convict and, in fact, was executed in the first sequence of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But then his body had been donated to Cyberdyne Systems, which eventually was subsumed into Skynet, et cetera, whatever. So how you get from there to the end of the movie is he now has a self-revelation, you know, kind of sequence of events where he's actually helping people mm-hmm. instead of working for himself, and he's trying to make different choices. Here, I can appreciate the kind of, you know, bow on top that says, okay, now he's come full circle,
yeah.
and he's giving his life for this dude that, you know, was kind of a jerk to him for most of the time that they ever interacted.
Pretty much.
But wouldn't it have been great if he didn't open his mouth, or if the rest of them convinced him that it was a dumb idea, because it really is a dumb idea.
They're like, oh, John Connor's dying. Okay, bye.
Peace out, Johnny.
Peace out. We love you, and you know, we'll remember you fondly.
Would you like to record anything on this cassette tape that we've erased from your mother's recordings that were on here before? So maybe you want to say some last words that we can listen to repeatedly.
And honestly, like I said, with that second time around, you find yourself more invested in Sam Worthington's character. Yes, John Connor is the iconic role that is passed down every iteration of this film that's made from the first Terminator, every installment, to the second one, to the third one, into this one. John Connor is pretty much the focal point from his conception in the first one to his, you know, understanding of his role in the second one. To his finding, you know, the base where he hides out in the third one, which was kind of bootsy. And then, so he's always been the focus of all of them. So as somebody who comes in knowing that series, you go in with the mindset of that's who you're going to focus on. But then if you break your routine for this film alone and you actually focus on the broader spectrum, the larger world of itself of the film, and you see characters like Sam Worthington's character, Kyle Reese, as a young person, Kyle Reese, not full soldier who's already getting prepped to be sent back in Terminator 1, but young Kyle Reese. You have Star, you have Moon Bloodgood, you have Common, who seems like a really legit militaristic individual.
He seems really cool. You don't know much about him.
Exactly.
His brother died in the opening battle sequence that John Connor's a part of, but, mm-hmm. you know, he's a legit guy.
It's like a whole ragtag team of people who understand the enemy that they're facing and have the knowledge, because one thing about that, we were talking about it yesterday, Sam Worthington's character, Marcus, ultimately syncs up with Skynet right before he leaves off and goes and does his own thing to save John Connor and Kyle Reese. He plugs in, he like syncs his iPad up to the mainframe.
He gets the full download.
So he has every bit of information they could use, every weakness, every stronghold, everything that they're still building, every amount of information that they could use to finally and fully destroy Skynet. And
bye.
They let him kill himself.
Bye, Felicia.
Bye, Felicia.
Last question, I suppose, is if they had killed John Connor and let Marcus Wright live on as, you know, the dude that knows everything, can do everything, and basically can't be killed without a lot of effort, and becomes their ace in the hole, their Terminator on the humans team, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Could that franchise have survived if John Connor was no longer a part of it?
That is a good question, and honestly, it's a conflicting one for me because of the fact of my love for the original films and how well, in a new light, I see this film. I would probably have to break the norm and say, yes, I think the film, the series could survive, because the film originally wasn't about one singular character. If you look at it as a whole, it was about the survival of mankind, the survival of humans facing off against the resistance, the initial idea of the fact that there's going to come a day when there's going to be a big battle, and we're going to be facing off against hundreds and thousands of robots that are, you know, fully aware. Can we make it? And I think that ending, where we have John Connor passing away, almost like passing the torch, that would probably fit better with every iteration. And I'm calling it. I feel that the films should, from here on out, look to pushing out the idea of John Connor, because we've had John Connor since 1984, since the first Terminator. That was when Terminator 1 was released in 19...
It was just a glimmer in his parents' eyes.
Exactly.
You know, it's interesting, because I was thinking also one of the things that happens before Skynet Central is taken offline in San Francisco. The Skynet computer system, with the face of Helena Bonham Carter's character, very specifically tells Marcus, after his, you know, reboot upload, you know, put him back together from all of his brokenness from what happened before, she says, "You will not save John Connor." I think that there would have been a lot of poetic justice in, mm-hmm. yes, they destroyed Skynet Central. They killed the first Arnold Terminator, mm-hmm. you know, that we know of, that showed up in the movie and all this stuff. And yet John Connor did still die.
Yeah.
You know, what would that mean for the franchise moving forward? I think it would have been really compelling for them to have tried, but they yeah. didn't.
And it opens the door. I mean, if anything, if there's ever a series that could do something so much of a gift, give so much of a gift to any fan of a longstanding franchise, it's to allow the fans to see an open door. This open door would have been, what would the future be like going forward without John Connor? Is that something that we can survive? And obviously they can. They have the tools that were passed down, just like Sarah Connor before them. It's no longer become an idea of one man is the savior of the resistance, but it becomes the man's ideas, the man's thoughts, the man's teachings, the man's midnight fireside chats, his knowledge that he's passed down, that becomes the savior.
Sure.
Then it's no longer focused on one man.
The motif is already there, like you said, with Sarah as a yeah. character. The motif is already there. You wouldn't have to verge too far to then start applying it to Johnny Boy.
Yeah.
May he rest in peace.
So with that, we here at the Film Philosophers give this film probably a solid 4 monocles out of 5.
Oh, for sure.
Easily. This film could very well become a very, very much loved part of your Terminator series, as long as it doesn't include Terminator 3. But we actually really like it, and we feel like, you know what, if you're into giving second chances, which is what this film's all about, this film is truly, from beginning to end, it's about second chances. And I feel the best way to really give this a second chance is to give it another viewing, give it another chance.
And if you think that we're just a couple of idiots, you can feel free to let us know. Visit filmlosophers.com and follow the trail to send us some messages.
Not only that, we also have our Facebook page up at facebook.com/filmlosophers. We also have a Twitter page up at filmlosophy101. And you know what? It was great having you guys on the, giving us a listen to. We hope you can check out more of what we got. A couple little movie bites before we head out, just to let you know. We're looking forward to the Blu-ray release of Star Wars The Force Awakens, April 5th. Finally, we finally get to see the film in our homes. Also, Batman vs.
Endless repeat.
Endless repeat. That film, that Blu-ray is never going to leave our sound system there. Also, Batman vs. Superman releases in theaters March 25th. Get your tickets now, because I'm pretty sure as soon as they start going on sale at the actual film theaters, they're going to sell out really quick. Also, too, this Friday, 10 Cloverfield Lane releases in theaters. There's not much information about the film, honestly. They decided to start promoting 2 months ahead of schedule.
They did not spoil their big reveal in their trailer.
They did not. In fact, I don't even think I know the full understanding of the film with their full trailer.
In fact, they might not have a big reveal in the movie.
That is true. And with that, you know, we here at Film Philosophers are just very much so about educating people about the great things of film. So with that, we are signing off. I am Eddie.
I'm Chad.
And we are the Film Philosophers.
Bye.